Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Terrifying Encounter in Northern New Mexico by Ghostly 1617. This story comes from the perspective of an old co-worker named Cujo, a member of the Navajo Nation. When I was working in construction in Northern New Mexico on a reservation, he told me about a very strange encounter that he had near his home, somewhere between New Mexico and Arizona. It began one night after Cujo had finished a grueling 12-hour shift. When he got home, he and his wife got into a heated argument. Frustrated, he left the house with a pack of beer and started driving around the reservation roads near his home. After a few minutes of driving through the dark desert, he found a narrow road that wound up toward a mountain or basin. He said the path was so steep and tight that he was surprised he made it to the top without rolling off, and he knew getting back down would be even harder. At the top, Cujo sat on the tailgate of his truck drinking and trying to calm down. After some time, he began hearing strange noises in the distance, sounds unlike anything he had ever heard. He was familiar with coyotes, wild dogs, and other desert animals, but this was different. The noises were faint at first, so he didn't think anything of it. After his second or third beer, he heard the sounds again, closer this time. He said it sent a chill down his spine. Uneasy, he decided to get back into his truck, drink the rest inside, and listen to some music. A few minutes later, the noises returned, now louder, almost like screams. Terrified, he started his truck and sped down a random dirt road. Not knowing exactly where he was, he took another path leading away from the mountain. But the screams continued. Then, out of nowhere, he was forced to stop. Standing in the road was an elderly Navajo man holding a shotgun. The man ordered Cujo to stop and come inside his house. Cujo then asked me, "What would you do in that situation? Keep driving in the dark with those noises following you? Or listen to the man with the gun telling you to go inside?" He chose to go inside. To his surprise, inside this small home was an elderly woman with three young children, none older than 12, all holding rifles or shotguns. The man asked Cujo if he had heard the noises, and Cujo confirmed yes. The stranger warned him that he wouldn't be safe alone and insisted that he stay the night. Cujo said that he had never met these people before and had no idea anyone even lived in that area. That night, no one in the house slept. The strange noises continued, followed by screams, footsteps, and something circling the small home until dawn. When the first light of morning appeared, Cujo thanked the family and left. He said they were kind people and that he was grateful for their help that night, because he truly didn't know what might have happened otherwise. After that experience, he never went out alone on the reservation at night, especially unarmed. He had heard stories of Bigfoot and skinwalkers before, but he never believed them until that night. I was just 18 when he told me the story. I'm 30 now. I worked with Cujo for 3 years before joining the military, and I haven't seen or spoken to him since, but I believe his story and others that I've heard from people who live on the reservation.
I Think Bigfoot Crashed My Family Vacation by D. Mill. My family and I moved to Idaho a year ago and purchased a camper in the spring. When we asked my 5-year-old daughter what she wanted to do on our family vacation, she replied that she wanted to go to the wild, look for Bigfoot, and see the ocean. Now that we were so much closer to all those things, we planned a week-long trek from Idaho to the Oregon coast, camping along the way there and back. My daughter has been super into Bigfoot since she was about 2 years old. In fact, the theme of her 3rd birthday was Believe with Bigfoot as the mascot. In July 2026, we loaded up and headed out. Mommy, Daddy, our 5-year-old daughter, our 2-year-old son, and our 2 hound dogs. We had a wonderful time on the way there. My daughter would collect moss off trees and believe she'd found Bigfoot hair. We would do calls and get calls back from other campers. My husband even walked barefoot just outside of our camp for our daughter to find tracks. He's a size 14, so it worked out pretty well. The things we do for our children. After we were done at the coast, we had a limited number of days to get back home. But driving straight through would have been 13 hours, which was too much for the kids, and honestly, for me too. So we drove about 6 hours and came to a town I believe was called John Day, Oregon. This whole trip had been very lightly planned. When it was time to camp, we would just drive into national forests, find a forest road, and set up somewhere. It had worked out well so far, even though we were in unfamiliar areas. This time, though, we had a hard time knowing where to go. We ended up in the truck for another 3 hours, looking for a spot outside of John Day. My kids' eating schedule is pretty airtight, usually around 5:30 p.m., and by the time we finally got onto a forest road, it was about 7. The kids were done, the dogs were done, and to be honest, I was pretty done myself. It was a Friday night, and I thought it was super odd that we didn't encounter many people in the area. We passed maybe 3 vehicles and saw no other campers, unlike everywhere else we'd stayed. That surprised us. We turned onto a forest road and saw a black-tailed deer hop across the road. I pointed it out to the kids and we kept going. About a mile later, we found a spot just off the road. It had a fire pit and a deer hoist made out of trees and logs. My husband and I are both avid hunters, so if the spot was good enough for them, it was good enough for us. My husband pulled in. And as he did, I thought I saw movement in the trees outside his window. "What?" he asked. "Oh, I thought another deer might have been over there, but maybe it was just a bird," I said. We got out of the truck and looked around. There was an old road blocked off by big mounds of dirt years ago, but behind that was a bare spot with no trees. Other than that, though, thick pine trees all around us. The camper door faced the forest road, which opened to a beautiful view of mountains across a vast valley. The back of the camper faced all the pine trees. Looking around, though, I felt off. That feeling like someone was watching me. I kept feeling like I needed to look over my shoulder. As a sensitive person, though, I've learned to mostly ignore weird feelings and move on. We met at the camper door and started setting up camp. That's when a stench hit my nose. Rotting flesh. I knew that smell well from growing up processing wild game. Oof, I touched my nose. Something is dead around here. Yeah, I smell it too, my husband said. Do you want to find a different spot? I really didn't. At this point, it would be 8 by the time I cooked and fed the kids. So I said no, it's only for one night anyway. We're just going to have to watch the dogs to make sure they don't get into it, my husband said. We let the kids and the dogs out. While he finished setting up, I cooked dinner outside of the camper. I still couldn't shake the odd feeling, and for some reason I felt that I needed to be extra vigilant with the kids, keeping them really close. The dogs, strangely, didn't wander far at all. Usually their noses get the best of them. I also thought I'd have to keep them on a leash with something dead nearby, yet I never smelled it again. The sun doesn't set until about 9:30 in summer, so we all sat outside to eat. My husband and I were sitting with our backs facing the old road, in the place where I thought I'd seen movement. The kids sat facing us, also facing that direction. My daughter was picking dandelions, her head down. My son had finished eating and came over to me, babbling. When he suddenly looked past me and said, "Bear?" I should have listened to him. But my rational brain said, if there was a bear, we would have heard it, and the dogs would have gone crazy. So without even looking, both of us said, "No, there's no bear." Then his eyes went huge. His whole demeanor changed to fear. He got close to me, grabbed my arm, and said, "Kong Kong," and pointed behind me toward the old road. My husband, against my better judgment, had let our small kids watch King Kong, and Kong Kong is what our son calls him. This is when we both noticed how dead silent the forest was. Not a bird, not a squirrel, not even insects. We turned in our chairs to look. My toddler glued to my arm, my daughter holding onto her dad, and one of our hounds, facing the same direction, let out a low growl. Every hair on my body stood up. My husband said in a low, commanding voice, "Get the kids in the camper." I didn't hesitate. I grabbed the kids and got them inside. My husband was right behind us, grabbing the guns. We always travel with protection. He handed me mine. "Stay here. Keep the kids safe." He called the dogs, and the three of them, gun drawn, started up the old road. I left the kids in the camper and stood in the front of the door, watching him and the dogs make their way up the road. From the camper to the top of the hill was about 100 yards. The forest was still unnervingly quiet. Goosebumps covered my entire body. He was almost to the top, still in sight, when I heard distinct twigs breaking about 50 yards behind the camper, on the opposite side. I wanted to go look, but my mama bear instincts told me to guard the door my babies were behind. I checked on my husband. He'd reached the crest and was moving into the trees, so I was losing visibility. One dog followed him. The other suddenly came running back full speed toward the camper, tail tucked. Now, side note, that dog is so attached to my husband, I call her his shadow. These are hunting dogs, bred to hunt and attack bears and mountain lions. So for her to abandon him out of fear? Mind-blowing. Totally out of character. Between hearing something behind the camper and seeing the terrified dog, I felt the urge to take my gun off safety and get ready to fight. I genuinely felt like I was about to go into battle I didn't know with what, but whatever it was would have to kill me first before getting near that camper door. For what felt like forever, really only 4 or 5 minutes, I stood guarding that door. My gun pointed down, but ready. My dog trembling beside me. Silence. Nothing but my breathing and her teeth chattering. Then finally, I heard a thud, thud, thud sound. I looked down. It was my dog's tail, wagging and hitting the side of the camper. "Babe," my husband called from behind the camper. "You guys okay?" I immediately put the gun on safe, relieved. "Yeah, we're good. You?" He appeared with the other dog. "Yeah, just freaked out. What the hell was that?" I said I didn't know. He looked at the dog beside me. "Screw you too, by the way," he said. We both chuckled, and then we noticed that the forest was coming back to life. Birds were chirping. A squirrel was scampering down a tree. "Makes me feel better the forest is alive again," he said. "But I've felt really weird since we got here." I was relieved and surprised to hear that, because he isn't sensitive to energy at all. I told him I felt the same. We talked about finding another spot, but the sun was going down, and neither of us wanted to reset camp in the dark. One night. We had survived one night. After a not very restful night, wondering what was just outside those thin camper walls, we packed up first thing in the morning and got the heck out of there. When we got down the mountain and had cell service, my husband asked me to check BFRO. I did. Only 4 reports in that area, the latest from around 2007. After we got home, I was FaceTiming my grandparents and told them the story. Talking to my son, my grandpa asked, "Did you see Kong Kong?" My toddler replied, "Yeah, Kong Kong, go like this." Then he proceeded to contort his little body and walk exactly like the Patterson film. I try not to cuss in front of my grandparents, but all I could say was, "What the fuck?" Is that what my dog was terrified of? What the hell did I hear walking behind our camper? Later, my daughter, who had been so gung-ho to find Bigfoot before, said, "Mama, I don't think I want to see or find Bigfoot no more. He scared me." Me too, baby. Me too.
Has anyone ever been to Morlazan by Hopeful Ear 7229? When I was little, I used to spend all of July at my grandparents' house in the Sierra de Madrid. I remember that one year when my brother was ill, I spent the whole summer there. My parents would come on weekends and we would go on family outings with my uncles and cousins to a small village nearby called Morlazan. I used to eat sandwiches in the wheat field at the edge of the village with my family, next to the chapel. I was 10 and my cousin was 12, and that year they started letting us go to the village on our own when my grandmother couldn't take us to the pool. We did this so that we wouldn't get bored. You could walk there from my grandparents' village and it barely took 30 minutes. We went there around 10 times that summer and always returned at sunset. I remember many things, the white chapel, the houses, and a lady who always came out of mass at the same time and sometimes waited for us in the little square, sitting on a bench next to a fountain with a dolphin. She was very friendly, though she never told us her name. Or if she did, we don't remember. I also remember the day that my grandmother went into the hat shop in the square and bought a blue straw hat that she still has to this day. The thing is, after that summer, we never went back, and over the years, my cousin and I stopped thinking about the village and stopped talking about it. This summer, I'm going to spend a month at my grandparents' house again, and I thought about going back, but the strange part is, when I looked up the village on maps, nothing came up. I tried searching manually near my grandparents' village, but nothing. And when I asked my family, nobody remembers the place. They don't even remember going there, or the outings, or even the name. They say that we didn't go anywhere that summer, and that my grandmother bought the hat somewhere else. My cousin, however, remembers everything, and she's just as surprised as I am. I don't know if this is a glitch or what, but maybe somebody here has heard of the village or has had some experience with something similar.
Amazon Delivery from Alternate Reality by Jordan G. Back in 2021, I was living in my first apartment, waiting on an Amazon package. Exciting stuff, too. Women's vitamins and a pack of fake eyelashes. The delivery date came. I got an email saying it had been delivered, although there was no picture attached, and there was nothing on my porch. I waited a day before reaching out to chat support, and they told me, "Sometimes it shows delivered, but it's actually delayed a day." Sure, okay. I eventually got a refund, figured that was the end of it, and honestly didn't reorder anything. It was an impulse buy to begin with, so I took it as a sign that I didn't need any of it. A few days go by. I was heading out to run errands. Everything was normal. I walked out of my apartment, closed and locked the door behind me, and went straight to my car. Keep in mind, my car was right there, only a stone's throw away from my front door. Picture it. Door. Tiny concrete walkway. Boom. My car. One more detail. Each short walkway has two apartment doors, positioned in an L shape. They're close enough that it's awkward if you and your neighbor open your doors at the same time, meaning there's nowhere to hide anything. No blind corner, nothing. I sat in my car, scrolling for a song. Just a couple of seconds later, I looked back up, and there was an Amazon box sitting on my porch, directly in front of my door. I had just sat in my car. I would have seen a delivery driver, or literally anyone, walk past me toward my door with a package. There was no one. As I got out to grab it, a neighbor one walkway over came outside at the same time. I was staring at this box like it had materialized out of thin air, so I asked him, "Did you put my package here?" I thought maybe it had been misdelivered to him, and he was returning it. But he just looked confused and said he hadn't seen anything. I brought the package inside, opened it, and found everything I had originally ordered, everything I had been refunded for over a week earlier. I cannot stress this enough. From where my car is parked, I would have seen anyone approach my door. And there is absolutely no way I missed that box when I first walked out. So, thank you to whatever alternate reality decided to return my now free package of goodies.
My Friend's House by Johnny J. Jr. 13. When I was 14, I had a recurring encounter with a young girl. The first time I saw her, there were several of us messing around in my friend's backyard. We were playing on the playground and shooting Nerf guns at each other. As the sun was going down, in the slight glow, there was a little pale girl. She had short black hair, a dark green sweater, a dark skirt, and lighter green leggings. Her eyes were black. She was just standing there with one hand held awkwardly, the way someone would hold a wine glass. But there wasn't anything there. I looked away for a moment, and then she was gone. On another night, just before midnight, several of us decided to sneak some drinks over and jump on the trampoline. We were having a great time doing these dangerous stunts on the trampoline, and we stopped jumping around to have a drink. While all of us were attempting to sit still, we see the little girl just several feet away, and then in a flash, she's under the trampoline where we're sitting. Now, only me and my friend Mike noticed it. However, she didn't appear again that night. But I had another encounter with her after I moved into their upstairs apartment as an adult. Sometimes I would hear very faint humming. I always thought it was their grandmother that lived downstairs. But after she had her stroke, she couldn't hum anymore. The almost silent humming still continued. The only other encounter with her was a day where we were all hanging out in my friend's upstairs bedroom. As a side note, they had a hidden creepy-feeling crawl space in his sliding door closet that he didn't know about for the first 16 years of his life. Anyway, we were just playing games and joking around when I looked out their window. She was standing in the corner of the yard, smiling while staring up toward the window. Again, Mike was the only other person who noticed. Now, my friend's house was old. It had concrete walls in the basement, blocking a section off. It turns out it was a family's grave from over 100 years ago.
I Moved Back to My Childhood Home by Anonymous. Growing up in a haunted house, paranormal experiences were the norm. I never thought I'd have one definitive story to tell. Everything was always scattered through memory. Random events, little moments, things that got lost over time because spooky experiences felt normal. That changed today. My husband and I moved back to my small hometown from the big city in May. There were a lot of reasons. My parents are getting older, my dad is disabled, and I wanted to be close enough to help. But the biggest factor was fixing up my over 100-year-old childhood home. My maternal grandparents owned the house before my parents, and after my grandfather passed away from a heart attack inside the house, we moved my grandma elsewhere. My grandpa was a hands-on, hard-working, fix-it-yourself, former military kind of guy. Black coffee, everything in order, pipe always full of tobacco. Since buying the house in the early 90s, he became the designated handyman. Plumbing, electrical, walls, floors, you name it, he fixed it. He even added an entire bathroom himself. He was happiest in the garage, sleeves rolled up, working on whatever project he could find. After he passed in the early 2000s, my family moved in full-time, and my dad took over the garage. Same story, he became the new handyman. But after my dad suffered a stroke and became disabled, he couldn't use the garage anymore. Slowly, it turned into a cluttered, chaotic storage cave for years. Now that I'm back home and trying to DIY my way through this antique farmhouse, I've been going in and out of that garage more than anyone has in a long time. It's a mess. narrow little pathways between mountains of stuff, precariously stacked tools and car parts, and more spiders than I'd like to acknowledge. Every time my mom sees it, she shakes her head and says, "Your grandpa would be rolling in his grave if he saw that garage." Fast forward to today. I was taking advantage of the weekend to clean the laundry room and check if our washer would finally drain, since a plumber had just fixed our ancient drainage pipes. While working, I realized I needed an extension cord for the shop vac, and of course, the garage was my best bet. I walked in carefully, scanning for snakes or anything hiding in the piles. The path was clear, nothing in my way. As I stepped inside, I heard a strange dragging sound coming from deeper in the garage. A long, slow scrape across concrete. I froze, immediately assuming snake, and hurried toward the back where I spotted a cord plugged into an outlet on the far wall. I walked toward it cautiously, still scanning the ground, when I looked up to the doorway leading to the other half of the garage. My great-grandparents' rocking chair was now perfectly centered in the doorway, placed so precisely that I couldn't miss it. That dragging noise? It was the sound of that heavy wooden rocking chair being pulled into view. I had moved that chair weeks ago to a completely different spot, and the plumbers had absolutely no reason to go that far into the garage. The outlets they used were right at the entrance. In my gut, I knew exactly who it was. My grandpa. Upset. Trying to get my attention. Letting me know what he thought about the state of his garage. As soon as the shock eased, I grabbed the extension cord and said out loud, "Sorry, Grandpa. I know the garage is a mess. We'll get it sorted soon. I love you." When I turned to leave, something else caught my eye. On the narrow path, right before the exit, a large bottle of paint thinner had been placed directly in my way, a spot that had been completely clear when I walked in. My heart dropped. It wasn't meant to scare me, just a very direct message. Clean the damn garage. When I told my mom what happened, she didn't even blink. "I told you," she said. Then she added, almost too casually, that the rocking chair had belonged to my grandpa's parents. And the plumber who came to fix the pipes? A close friend of my grandpa's. No wonder he was pissed. Long story short, my ghost grandpa was embarrassed his old friend saw the disaster zone that used to be his pride and joy, and he made damn sure I knew it. Looks like I know what I'm doing next weekend.
Time Dilation on Superior Hiking Trail by Jesse, 1472. There aren't that many stories from Minnesota, so I'll add my eeriest one. I've spent a lot of time in Minnesota hiking, and I've seen a lot of crazy things. This one, though, is something that I've so far only experienced once. This happened about a year ago while hiking with my brother. We went on a day hike to the Superior Hiking Trail, starting at the trailhead just north of Tofty. The trip so far had been weird, with taking a late-night trip to the grocery store in Duluth to get snacks and the motel where we were staying having sex workers at it. It's Duluth, though, so we didn't think too much of it. Anyway, we started the hike early, around 7:30 a.m., and planned to hike for 4 hours before turning around and getting out of the woods around twilight. Now, for people who haven't hiked here, it's fairly rugged and not something that you want to be doing in the dark. Plenty of elevation changes and a mixture of prepared and unprepared trails awaited. The hike was decent, talking about life as I had gone through a rough patch not long beforehand. We were both fairly fit, so the steep grades at parts were challenging but doable, and this is important. So we hiked about 4 to 5 hours, and we ended up near Lutzen Lodge before turning around. While hiking, we passed several groups, one of which was a group of college students, clearly out for a leisurely stroll. At this point, we turned around, and the time dilation started. We started hiking back at a noticeably slower pace, maybe half or a little faster of what we had been doing before. As we walked, we didn't see any other groups, but we started noticing a bunch of mushrooms that, as far as our research found, weren't native to the area. Anyways, we get back to a point where we had stopped at earlier to figure out if we needed to speed up. My brother checked his phone when I zoned out before asking me, "What time do you think it is?" Recounting our pace and location, I assumed that it was 4 p.m., and we needed to pick up the pace to be out of there in an hour. Lo and behold, we somehow crossed the same distance that took us 2 hours before in only 1 hour. As we were trying to figure out how we hiked that distance faster, but at a slower pace, we began to realize all of the groups that we passed before hadn't been seen since. At the very least, we should have seen the college group, unless they went way off the trail. Finally, we get back to the trailhead. We somehow cut off 2 hours from our predicted return while walking slower. The whole time, we felt like we were in the twilight zone, but I had assumed up to that point that it was just the atmosphere of the trail and the fall. Now, this was the short version of a long story, so if it doesn't make sense, I apologize.
So apparently that wasn't our second dream-themed episode. We've had others. It's just that this is only the second one that we've named Dream Stories Number 2. A couple of people have mentioned that we've had other episodes that exclusively mention dreams. I say we just roll with it, keep it like some weird Star Wars episode format.
Yeah. Yeah, we should renumber them, where the first one's technically episode 4.
Yes.
And 5. And then this is episode, we should name this one episode. Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And I saw the comment as well. And it sort of confirmed the suspicion that I had. I felt like we had done more because we have so many dream stories. I just assumed, no, I think it's just because we tell so many of them. But they were right. I totally agree.
Just glancing at the sheet here, it looks like episode 81 had a bunch of them. It was titled Life is Just a Dream, and almost all of the titles have the word dream in it. So
yeah, that was definitely one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
That's why I love the listener feedback. We have one here from Luther. I think it's Luther. For episode 207, there are disorders where people do feel deep feelings towards inanimate objects, but I never wanted to hear a love letter to one. Or maybe it's just the Titanic adult is similar to the well-known Disney adult. And to be honest, I think the Disney adult, and no shade for any of them, I used to love Disney stuff as well. I mean, as they just got more and more evil and greedy, I just became less and less interested. But I think that the Disney adult is its own special thing, and it has to do with holding on to like childhood. That's just my
theory. I was about to say,
yeah. I think it's more of like a holding on to your childhood, and that's good. You keep that childhood wonderment. It's associated with a gigantic evil corporation. But, you know, they put out some rad stuff back in the day. So I'm with you there. But I think that's a little bit different than being a Titanic adult. I would just say Titanic person, because it's not something that's necessarily tied to childhood. It's tied to history. And People just get very involved in certain historical things, and I totally get that. I've recently got super into Renaissance period art, and we went to a museum today just to find some, and I could totally see myself becoming one of those adults where I start writing love letters to these painters. So yeah, I respect people with their obsessions, if you want to call them that. I like it.
It's good. Yeah, we all have our own little thing. Like mm-hmm. you and I cling on to the whole 90s VHS, old school internet type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it's healthy to an extent to have some sort of escape, some sort of outlet to tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say that the Titanic stories and like the dreams associated weren't actually some sort of past life? Like, yes, it was a little romantic, but I mean, you know what? You do you. Some people are into cars. That's like a thing.
Yeah.
Like into cars. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, yeah, I've seen the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, scary stuff. You'll get something chopped off if you're not careful.
Luther also said, I heard an interview with the person that could detect cancers and I believe Parkinson's, unless there are more than one, which honestly is likely anyway. She said that it can pose a real issue for her since it's not technically diagnostic. But which side is even ethical, not telling someone or telling someone? I'm guessing the only way to have people is to have people sign a waiver before you arrive at a dinner party or event. And I totally get that. I don't know if I would want to know.
And almost a little insulting. Like when you first hear that, that's like who are you? And then, oh yeah, you're that lady. You're her. Okay. I'll go get that checked out.
It's kind of offensive. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. offensive. I think it's offensive to bring up somebody's illnesses or sicknesses just because you can detect them. How do you know that they don't know that they have it and they're just not wanting to talk about it? It's a personal thing.
Yeah. Does a psychologist just make casual conversation like, hey, so how's that depression treating you, buddy?
Exactly. Yeah. I just bring it up at a dinner party. No, thank you. I'm kind of the same way about those DNA type tests where you can find out if you're, what's the right word I'm trying to think of?
A future Golden State Killer?
No. where you're like susceptible to a certain disease later on in life, like you have the gene, you know, that could,
yeah, like sickle cell.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to find that stuff out. I have a cousin that did that and he said that, I won't say exactly what he had the gene for, and he's like, so I'm doing all these things to take steps to make sure that I don't get it. I was like, yeah, I kind of get that, but I just wouldn't want to know because I would be obsessing over it my entire life.
Yeah, I would just look at family history and take precautions as best as you could,
mm-hmm.
eat healthy, stay active, and all the usual stuff. Everything else is just a luck of the draw, really.
Do you know what an egregore is?
Nope.
I don't either. Steinman family, referencing episode 207, said, you should check out the concept of the egregore. I think you would find it interesting. I didn't even Google it. I just put it on there to ask you if you knew. So who knows? Maybe somebody in the comments will let us know for next episode. Yeah. David said in relation to episode 199, porn in a barbershop? What kind of barbershop is that? Where do they have that kind of barbershop? Well, I won't say what town I'm in or I live in, but my town has one. They have a stack of porn. They have beers. It's pretty much just like a dude hangout, and it's pretty toxic, to be honest. I hate being in there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't really seen any beer in barbershops in America.
Oh, wow.
I've heard about it, but I've never seen it. When I was in London, I got my hair cut, and I was surprised. They gave me a Stella and a scalp massage, and it was cheap for London, too. It was like £20, if that, and that included tip. The haircut must have been like £12 or something.
Yeah, I didn't mind the porno mags and the beer being there. That's fine. That's cool. I get it. You're a guy's barbershop, whatever. But the attitudes of everybody that worked there was just awful. It was so bro. Let's see. Jordan Holiday said, I love you guys so much. You read my comment on today's podcast. I thought somebody just had my name, but you guys actually read my comment. Fucking love you, dudes. Jordan, I just wanted to create a comment inception. So it's a comment within a comment within an episode within an episode. There you go. Goldie said, Lennon and McCartney, Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy, all got nothing on the dynamic duo of Andy and Brandon. That's sweet of you.
Wow, that's quite the compliment.
Yeah, Abbott and Costello. Wow, Laurel and Hardy.
Should we get a third stooge even? I don't think so. That would be pretty obnoxious, I think. Three of us on here all the time.
Yikes. I can't think of anybody that I would want to have on here with us at all.
Yeah, beyond like the occasional guest or something. No, yeah. That's too much to coordinate.
Mm-hmm. Final comment here is, Erica said, I had to know who the talk show host was that owns a ranch in Montana that is haunted. I think it's David Letterman. Letterman and Ghosts? Sign me up for a job at that ranch. I don't think so. I did some Googling and I couldn't find anything about Letterman having a haunted ranch. I do remember Terry Bradshaw was on this episode of like a ghost show, celebrity ghost story, something like that. And he has a ranch that is haunted. They talked about things like items disappearing, rocking chairs moving around. We'll talk about that later. And like rooms that their daughter wouldn't even enter because it was so creepy. That was kind of cool. And I guess Terry Bradshaw, yeah, he's a former NFL player, but he was technically the host of a show. And it was a talk show. It's sports broadcasting, if that counts. So maybe that's what you're thinking of. But in any case, I would definitely visit a haunted ranch. What about you?
As long as it comes with some cattle, with some precision type of extraction marks, you know what I mean? Like the alien ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. 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 The laser cuts.
Yes, laser cuts.
I want to get back into some Linda Moulton Howe cattle mutilation stories. Man, they're so messed up and creepy.
They are, yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that you listen on Coast to Coast when you're driving your big rig.
Mm-hmm.
Let's jump into some stories here.
Sure. Let's jump over with our Bigfoot over into the Bigfoot story. I tried.
It was nice to get a Bigfoot story because I felt like that's all I was getting for a while. Like that's everything that would come up in my queue was always Bigfoot stories. So I was happy when we kind of took a break from it. But now that they're back, I'm very happy.
Yeah. Bigfoot's mm-hmm. always good. I do wonder like where the lore really came from. You know what I mean? Like there's so many different related type of entities that look like Bigfoot or could be attributed to what we think is Bigfoot and how much society may have shaped what we think or who we think Bigfoot is. But whatever the case may be, it's always fun to explore and compare notes.
Yeah. And I mean, Bigfoot's also something that's all over the world. In Australia, it's the Yowie. In different parts of the world, it's the Abominable Snowman. It's Bigfoot, it's Sasquatch. He seems to be everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, it's still, I hope I don't offend any big feet out there, but a big hairy monster, that's kind of, you know, kind of par for course when it comes to thinking of monsters, but I digress. We got the forest going dead silent. That's always a wonderful sign to think of. When the wildlife just completely goes silent, a storm might be happening. Or, and I'm just thinking rationally here, a predator might be approaching. The birds could just stop squawking and maybe even the insects pick up on it.
But then the dog panicking and like abandoning the husband, that's totally out of character.
Unless it saw a bobcat or something, I don't know.
Good point. Yeah, let's think rationally. You know what, for a change, let's switch to thinking rationally. We always like to just immediately affirm
ghosts.
The supernatural. It's ghosts. let's put on our critical hats today. I've been a little bit more realist and critical lately, a little skeptical.
Okay, yeah. In this episode alone, we'll put on our hyper-rational thinking caps, maybe lose all of our listeners overnight, but hey.
We're going to tear your stories apart.
So as for the two-year-old seeing something and reacting that way, maybe they saw something or maybe it was just a fussy little toddler wanting to get out of the woods and go somewhere more cozy. Just an idea. Could have seen anything. Or a bobcat.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, we're trying to be skeptical, but all of these things add up. There's the whole, like the toddler's mimicking the Patterson-Gimlin walk.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm trying to be as skeptical as possible, but this all points to Bigfoot.
There you go. We tried. Yeah, we tried. It lasted all but a minute, if that.
Yeah. I think that Bigfoot is like the most believable of all of the supernatural, cryptid, or paranormal topics.
Show me the bones, Jerry. Show me the bones.
Because, I mean, it's so believable. You know what I mean? Of course, there's a hairy ape man out there that just hides from us. I don't know.
Possible, yes. Plausible, perhaps. TBD.
Better than most.
Better than most.
So, but have you...
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Go
yeah,
ahead.
Okay. No, you go.
No, you. No,
okay,
you.
Okay, all right. I was going to change subject to a new story, but you go ahead.
Let's just do it. It's late for me. I've okay. had a long day. Let's keep
yeah,
it moving.
I know.
Thanks for
know.
The Bigfoot story. We affirm your experience, all joking aside.
I wanted to ask you, have you ever heard of Morlazan?
No, that's two things I haven't heard of.
Yeah, so Morlazan. This story was interesting. I just picked it up because I was like, Morlazan, that sounds like something. It's a good word. It could be a city. It could be a county, a country, or something. I couldn't find a single thing on this place. And it's so weird because you... The author, you had so many vivid memories, including a family member, I think it was your cousin, that shared the same exact memories of this place, Morlazan. And that's a very specific name. I get it. What happened here? Did there used to be a place called Morlazan? But then you have to look at how the family all just completely disagreed on this place even existing. They said they didn't even go to this place. I think their aunt or their mom or whoever bought a hat at this place in Morlazan. They're like, no, I actually bought it at this store in this town, this village or whatever.
What I thought of was Mazatlan. And I know I'm not saying that right, even though like my Spanish is like a solid 6.5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
But Mazatlan is what came to mind when I saw the name of it. But apparently it's not real. So
yeah,
definitely wrong there.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything for Morlazan with an L. But I found it to be a really interesting story because it wasn't just that they had the name wrong of the place. The family didn't even remember going to a town like that. Nothing.
And kids usually remember those sort of small family adventures more than adults do to them. It could have just been some routine stroll. But for a kid, that's like an adventure. So it's going to sink into your memory a bit more. So, or maybe they just mispronounced it as kids and continued on calling it that name. Like we have nicknames for places.
Sure.
Maybe that's just what the kids nicknamed it and it just kind of stuck and the adults never really caught on to their mispronunciation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It comes off as a Mandela effect type story. And I like those stories. I do like those stories, but I'm becoming kind of fatigued by that theory, by that phenomenon, because I am becoming less and less convinced that it's an actual thing. And that's, like, I was ready to die on the hill that it was Berenstain Bears.
No, there you go.
Yeah. I was ready to die on the hill that it was Berenstain Bears. But, you know, once I finally, like, accepted the fact that, wait, the author's names are Berenstain. That makes sense why they would call it Berenstain, not Berenstein. And I looked at, you know, my childhood books and they were all Berenstain. I even have a VHS that says Berenstain that I got from the Long John Silvers in our hometown. And yeah, I get it. I was convinced. And then I saw the other one where people were saying it was Sinbad the Genie, the movie. You know,
I'm
like, dude, no, you guys are obviously confusing it with Kazam. And then somebody's like, no, there's this cover for this movie and he's dressed as a genie. And like, when you look it up, he did a TV promo spot for this marathon of Sinbad the Pirate movies on like the USA Network. And he was dressed up like Sinbad the Pirate and people were using that and they pasted him into a fake movie cover called Sinbad, the genie or whatever. What was it like? Kazam, not Kazam. They called it something. Shazam. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just becoming more and more like convinced that nah, we're just misremembering things and it's due to similar things. It's just us getting similar things mixed up.
I thought it could have been just from renting Shazam and Richie Rich. Wait, is it Richie Rich or the first kid? See, now I'm getting...
Well, first of all, it's Kazam.
It is Kazam, that's right.
Richie Rich was the one with Macaulay Culkin, right?
No, I'm thinking... I mean, it may have been.
Yeah.
I think I'm thinking of the first kid. Richie Rich may have been, yeah, Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
But the first kid was with...
The first kid.
That one guy who, like, made money on Bitcoin and he was involved in some big old scandal, like, in the early 2000s. Remember him?
Wow.
Brock something? I'm going to look him up right now.
That's wild. Yeah. While you're looking him up, I also want to say Zachary Ty Bryan, who was from Home Alone, was also in that movie. And I'm pretty sure he had a brush with the law recently.
Hmm.
Yeah. A domestic violence incident. He was arrested and there's a video of him being arrested and like talking about like, you probably remember me from Home Alone or stuff like that.
Wow. And it's a Brock Pierce. That's a fun rabbit hole. Yeah, goes from child actor to being involved with some illicit productions in the 2000s to being some Bitcoin crypto bro. Really weird.
Oh, super weird. I did love that movie, and I actually loved it so much that I got the soundtrack on CD.
First kid?
I was so into it. It had I Got the Power. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, it's a good one.
It made me get into boxing as a kid, too. I remember thinking, wow, what if I go to a school dance and I get into a fight? I better learn how to box. Yeah. And then my first school dance, I didn't get into a fight, but like my friend did. And it was very similar to that movie, a little bit of bullying and a couple right hooks thrown. And it kind of solidified the need to learn how to know how to throw a punch, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I love those movies. Good stuff from that era.
Blank Check. Now that's a creepy one in hindsight.
Yeah. That one is creepy. That's the one with the adult woman kissing the child, right?
Yeah.
She kisses him right on the lips.
That's one of those things where, yep, if the roles were reversed, people would be infuriated, and rightfully so, but
rightfully so, yeah, absolutely.
Come on now. Doesn't make that one any much better.
No, exactly. It's wrong both ways. It's super weird, you know. We just for some reason we were just okay with it back then. It's weird, man. It's so weird.
We watched it in school and like the teacher was just like smiling, everybody was like woo and cheering it on, but
yeah. It really is a sign of the times had changed. We're living it right now.
Yeah. Getting with the times. We're getting so old and traditional in our late age in some ways, but also progressing. Not the smoothest transition, but the grandfather in the whole garage situation, I bet you he would have something to say about Blank Check. He might, like, I don't know. He probably hated that movie because no boy deserves that amount of money so soon, and he invested it in the wrong thing, and, you know, he would probably make something reappear out of nowhere and say hello.
That mansion that he bought with that $1 million check was clearly a multi-million dollar mansion.
And that's in Austin, so you can imagine how expensive it is now. But I did like this story just because it was a protective haunt, but in its own way, not like a guardian angel sort of thing. It's like guardian angel light. Just a good story, some loving corrective discipline that you'd expect from a stern but caring grandfather. And we've all had those. I've had a couple.
Yeah, one of mine was, definitely.
Was the other one like very jolly and lovey and all that?
No, he was just kind of like a wild spirit. He never really had a real job, I don't think. He just like traded and sold stuff.
Ooh, I like
and
that.
Just like kind of moved around. He was a little transient in that way. Really cool guy, though. I liked him.
I like that. I like that sort of thing. If you can make it work for you, do it.
Yeah. He was the Native American side of the family. He was a very cool guy. I got all of his records when he passed away. Lots and lots of Conway Twitty.
I mean, that checks out.
Yeah, you really liked him.
Any Steely Dan or Hall & Oates?
No. It was all classic country. That's all it was.
Okay.
That was his thing.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Great, good stuff.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you have any stories, any questions, any comments, you can just email us at stories@oddtrails.com. And you can sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails. You'll get ad-free versions of all of our episodes. It's the best way to listen to the show. Plus, you get to support us boys. And be sure to check out the new episode of my other podcast, Let's Not Meet, at crypticcountypodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody, stay safe.
Peace out.
Ghouls disturb you, darling.